Greetings and good evening, everyone, and welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast. This is your host, Mark Fraley. Tonight we have a very special guest, Dr. Susan Knowles from Middle Tennessee State University. Susan and I have been friends for more than 40 years. We first met in Sevier County, where she was serving as the librarian for the Sevier County Public Library, and I was Parks and Recreation Director for the City of Gatlinburg. Our lives have progressed and we've all moved on. Susan introduced me to my wife, Beth. They were friends at camp as children. A whole bunch of us live now in Nashville. So Susan obviously has training in library science, but she also has training in art history and architectural history. She's been involved in the arts scene here in Nashville for many years as an arts consultant for such institutions as the Nashville Airport Authority and for Fisk University, Van Vechten Gallery. She's also been a contributor to the Nashville scene, writing about topics pertaining to the arts here in Nashville. More lately, Susan has attained a doctoral degree in the field of public history from MTSU. Tonight, I want to talk to her about that and about her most recent project, that being an exhibit at the Museum of East Tennessee called the Rock of Ages exhibit. So, Susan, welcome to the Mark Fraley Podcast.
Thank you.
All right.
My pleasure.
Great to have you here. Susan, I had dinner the other night with some folks that I know quite well, and I told them that we were going to be speaking, and I said to them that you'd gotten a degree in public history, and they didn't have a notion of what that was. What is that?
Well, public history is essentially doing history in public and for the public and with the public, and it's practicing getting into the background, learning about what brought things to a certain place and making that evident and bringing it into the conversation.
I understand that MTSU is one of the first institutions to, maybe the first institution to have a degree in that
field. Well, there are not many. MTSU has a PhD in public history, but
right.
It's had a master's program basically built upon historic preservation.
Right.
That's one of the strengths at MTSU, and it has a center of excellence in historic preservation
right.
that was actually founded by Lamar Alexander when he was governor of Tennessee. They're across the state for different disciplines,
right.
and ours is historic preservation.
I do remember that Jim Huda was the founding character involved in that program out there.
That's right. There are many graduates all over the country, actually, of that
right.
program. And historic preservation usually anchors on an existing building or structure or town square or something, some physical evidence of the past in the built environment. But we take a more activist role, I would say, in that a lot of our work is community-based, and we usually only work on projects where we're invited. We try to serve the state. We even work sometimes on things that are outside our borders. So much of our Tennessee history is actually connected into Alabama, Kentucky, Arkansas,
sure.
Georgia, North Carolina.
Sure.
So we don't necessarily turn those down if there's something that feels like a good partnership.
So you went on to get your PhD in public history, and but you're continuing to be affiliated with the university now.
I am. I'm doing digital projects there, virtual exhibits, essentially bringing primary sources to the public in free, accessible, online. We're doing thematic digital collections on different topics that have to do with Tennessee history. And because we want to make those things available for students, teachers, general public, to learn history for themselves by looking at the actual document or learning how to read a photograph, looking at all the information that's in a photograph from an earlier period, or looking at a building and understanding how it looks like it was put together and how those materials that it's made of mean and where they might have come from. It sort of leads us into what we're...
Exactly. Your dissertation, or your major project for your PhD, had to do with the Rock of Ages. Tell us about that.
My background's in art and architectural history. And the public history question that you asked, I realized I had had a career working in museums, and that so much of what you do in a museum is writing labels, it's creating public programs, it's creating products like video casts or films or exhibits for the public to come and experience history firsthand. And that encounter, that educational encounter, not in the classroom but out in the world, is what really interested me. So I realized a lot of what I had done was actually public history. And I backed into this topic the idea that we in Tennessee had a major industry in Tennessee marble. I backed into it at the U.S. Capitol. I was there researching artists, architectural artists, portraits, sculpture, things that are attached to that building that in some way or another have a connection to Tennessee. And I was in the building and somebody said, well, we're really interested in all this Tennessee marble. We have a lot of it in the building. And I thought, well, I don't know anything about Tennessee marble. I didn't know we had an industry. So I started looking into it and realized there's a big story here. How did it get inside the U.S. Capitol? Where else is it? And so that's what took me into realizing I wanted to do this research project. So I went down to MTSU and talked to Dr. Van West, who is now the Tennessee State Historian.
Okay.
He's an amazing historian. His background is in historic preservation, but more importantly, really in material culture and architectural history.
Okay.
And so he said, oh, this looks like something to really pursue. We'll give you a little desk and a very short-term fellowship, and you bring your research back from Washington and sit down and see what you have. And I started realizing there was more there, and I wanted to actually do a traditional dissertation to make myself do that research.
Terrific. You know, I got out my trusty copy of Killebrew's Resources of Tennessee to look up Tennessee marble and was surprised at what I found. He talks about that the U.S. federal government apparently started one of the first, if not the first, quarry just for the purpose of gathering stone for that, for the Capitol building. Is that what you understand?
I think they leased a quarry. They made an arrangement with someone. But you find this, and Joseph Buckner Killebrew is our Commissioner of Agriculture in Tennessee, very progressive. He worked hand in hand with the state geologist, who was another scientific thinker and really in the vanguard. This man was James Safford.
Okay.
And the two of them worked together on that Resources of Tennessee.
Yes, that's right.
And in fact, the marble story, Safford picked up the story and reported it. He's writing in the 1850s, and this is the time when the marble's going up to the U.S. Capitol. It's going from Hawkins County, Upper East Tennessee, Rogersville. Mm-hmm. And the really interesting story there is that the superintendent of construction for the Washington Monument, which was being built at that time, which was not a federal project, it was actually called the Washington National Monument, it was being built by a society, private individuals who were raising money. And the man who was their superintendent of construction was a man named William Doherty. He was an accomplished stone mason who had risen through the ranks and was really knowledgeable about all the process. He'd worked on some of the federal building projects, the post office and patent office in D.C. So Doherty sees at the Washington National Monument, they recruited every state to send an example of their best stone. And it sounds like they were going to build it out of that. But in fact, what they were doing was they were trying to get people interested in participating. And you send an example of your best stone, and then they will embed it on the interior Okay. These stones are on the inside of the Washington Monument. They're called memorial stones because they memorialize the states or the organizations that sent them.
Okay.
You find all kinds of things. When you go up to Washington, you can ask the Park Service ranger there to take you in the elevator and stop and let you see the Tennessee stone.
Oh, okay.
Because they're at different levels.
I've never been up that elevator in there.
So definitely do it. In fact, we have three stones inside the National, now the Washington Monument.
Okay.
Because when they were building it, 1840s is when it, I think the cornerstone might have been laid in 1849. Our Tennessee State Capitol is under construction. The architect, William Strickland, is in Nashville. And the designer who won a competition for that monument was Robert Mills, architect in Washington, who was really kind of Strickland's peer, maybe even a rival, same age men who had projects at the same time. So when they did this call for send us your best stone, Strickland sent a sample of, and these stones are, they're 2 feet by 4 feet by maybe 4 inches. So they're slabs.
Okay.
He sent one of the limestone they were building the Capitol out of.
Just plain gray.
It's a plain gray limestone, and it has engraved on it Nashville, Tennessee.
I got it.
Okay, so there that is. So then the official stone from Tennessee comes through the governor. The governor taps the state geologist and says, what should we send? Okay, so they ask a man named Orville Rice up in Rogersville, Tennessee, to send a piece of this Tennessee marble. So he sends this beautiful piece of kind of a rose-colored marble up, and it has engraved on it Hawkins County, Tennessee. Okay, so this is from Rogersville. So the people in Washington love this, and they say, okay, well, let's make that the official stone, but we want you to put some quotation on it or something special that will make it be the official stone from Tennessee. So in fact, what they did is they took another stone and they put a quote on it from Andrew Jackson, from a Democratic dinner in the 1830s. The quote is, the Federal Union, it must be preserved.
Okay.
But now here we are in the 1850s.
Right
and Tennessee
the
says,
War.
The Federal Union, it must be preserved. That's going to be on our state stone.
Gotcha.
So it's engraved on there and it's gilded. And so there is a beautiful dark pink stone with that quotation on it. And so all three of them are inside. So they're at different levels.
All right, backing up just a second for folks that are not familiar. What is Tennessee marble?
Well, Tennessee marble, like all marbles, it is limestone.
Right.
It's a, you know, calcium carbonate. Okay.
Sedimentary type of rock.
Yes, it's a sedimentary rock. Right. Exactly right. Now, a pure marble has to have undergone metamorphosis. So we don't have pure white marble in Tennessee. What we have is a very hard limestone that has, in many cases, it has a crystalline structure.
Okay.
It's colored by the different minerals. So it ranges, ours ranges in color from light pink, almost kind of a buff color, off-white, to a dark brown, which is they call it variegated. It has a white vein, white deposits in it. In many cases, it's, you know, formerly fossils. There's the dark color is almost like a very thickly marbled steak.
Okay.
That is what the Victorians loved. And you see mantelpieces made out of it. You see tabletops made out of it. That's what's in the U.S. Capitol as wainscoting and stair balusters and stairs. That's
almost the color of a bloodwurst, a red.
And that's what's inside the Tennessee State Capitol.
Okay.
The central grand stair is very similar to what's inside the U.S. Capitol. But you also have, there's some greenish tones that occur. There's a lot of beautiful kind of fossil action in these.
You don't typically think of sandstone as being something that that would take a polish, but this really does polish
well,
it beautifully.
It's limestone.
Limestone, not sandstone.
Yeah, and okay. It does take a polish. You can hone the surface to close up kind of the pores.
Okay.
You know, if you wanted to use it for a kitchen counter or something like that, the honed finish, but it also takes a really high shine polish.
Right.
But if you see it in the unpolished state, like for example, and I didn't know this, and I grew up in Washington, D.C., both buildings of the National Gallery of Art are Tennessee marble exterior. It looks like an off-white, except when you're up there when it's raining. And then you start to see the pink and you start to see the veining.
Now you're speaking of the modern IMPEI building.
Both buildings.
Building.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
The 1940 building and the 1979-80 building.
Okay.
The only link between those two buildings really is that material.
Okay.
And that's what Pei said. He came back down to Tennessee to find the same source for the marble.
Okay, so you mentioned that it occurred in Rogersville, Hawkins County, but it occurs throughout the state, as I've read in Killebrew's book.
Well, it goes down, if you picture the Appalachian chain,
right.
Goes down the chain.
Right.
And it turns out that deeper, wider, more fruitful deposits were located in Knox County and Blount County. And that's where the industry really took off. So,
is there still an industry in marble?
There is.
Okay.
There is one company still open, still quarrying and finishing marble, and they're sole source now. They're in Friendsville, Tennessee. It's the Tennessee Marble Company.
Friendsville
is just outside of Maryville. It's on Highway 321. And they have two operations that are on either side of 321.
All right.
And so it's definitely worth a drive around to look at. But there are lots of these quarries now that are, there's one place you can actually hike down in a former quarry, and that's at Iams Nature Center in Knoxville.
I was going to ask about Iams.
And there are two quarries there that we put on the National Register of Historic Places. So we nominated these for their historic significance. And the fact that you can go to this nature center, which is right across the river, really, from downtown Knoxville in the Island Home neighborhood, and hike down in and see the aftermath of industry, where you see what are called benches, where they've quarried out stone. You can see where blocks were removed, and it makes kind of a natural amphitheater.
Okay.
And that's very rare. Usually they're closed up and dangerous and abandoned and, you know, things happen in former quarries. And one of these at Iams was that. It had been, what happens often is once you quit quarrying, the water table will rise back to where it was and they'll fill with water. And so a lot of times these former quarries just look like lake, you know, like a man-made lake.
Right, right.
But they're using this one for water sports and things like that.
So these quarries didn't run out of marble. I mean, from the descriptions I've read of the resource, there's still a lot of marble there.
Yeah, there is. And they're using new equipment now that makes it easier. I mean, of course, obviously, the further, you know, the closer to the surface, the easier it's going to be. But there's often what they call a big overburden in the way and the way the marble, the pitch is, you know,
okay.
If you think about the grain of a sedimentary rock,
wow.
It's much easier to quarry it with the grain and work with that. Otherwise, it's going to break. I mean, you can't cut it against, you know, and you can't blast this. It's not going to work. So there's a lot to it.
Yeah, there's been no dynamite used in gathering
that. That was a
Strictly drilling and using wedges to separate.
Right. Although now they have these diamond saws, just major things, and that diamond, that really transformed the industry too. But there was also an accompanying industry of machinery for marble that came out of Knoxville. And they were making custom machinery that would work with the industry. And so if you go back and you look at the old publications from like 1890s, 1900, 1920s, 30s, you see these ads from Knoxville for, you know, the finest
Steam-powered saws.
Yeah, well, steam and later electric.
Okay.
Sure.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay.
But yeah, so it's a whole...
Great big machines.
There's a whole package here of how an industry like this then becomes a real engine for the economy, and it certainly was. Knoxville, you know, took on the name the Marble City at one time. Someday, and we haven't ever been able to quite pin it on any one person. Obviously, it was used as promotional, but you know, who and exactly when, we know by the 1890s that term was being used.
And this material was transported by rail or by barge
at
or...
At the beginning, yeah. Hawkins County, if you think about how far up
that is remote even today.
You know, yeah. You've got to put it on the Holston River and get it down into the, you know, Tennessee, and the Tennessee River's formed from the confluence of the Holston and the French Broad.
Right.
So if you can get it, you know, it's not ever flowing with a load that heavy. You know, so they used wagons, they used teams, many teams of mules,
right.
The hauling to get it to the river, to get it down to, then finally, when the railroads come in, and that's in the 1850s.
Right.
The Knoxville, the railroad coming up from the south, was, I think, 1852. So before then, you had to float it all the way down the Tennessee River to get to the West Tennessee and Georgia Railroad, which would have been down, you know, somewhere in the Chattanooga vicinity.
Wow.
But then once the railroads can also go north of Knoxville, 1858-59, you've got the ability to much more quickly reach the East Coast. But the railroads are key in this. It's
exactly.
Heavy cargo. It becomes
exactly.
A prestige status cargo. And so you find it in major public buildings across the country. They want to emulate what's going on in Washington. You find it in railroad terminals all over the country and in Canada. You find it in state capitals, you find it in courthouses, you find it in banks, because it represents, you know, iconically represents stability. And that's the architectural material and the meaning of materials right there. And so if you are traveling and you look at buildings of a certain period, you'll see it. You'll see it in the floors. Sometimes you'll see it in the exterior. Tennessee's, because of the decorative qualities, was really popular for interiors. And kind of once you put it in there, you know, it's clean, it's beautiful, it looks decorative. You don't need to do a lot else. And it became prominent once again during the federal architecture period of the 30s, this New Deal.
The WPA office. And those sorts
in those
of projects.
Post offices. In the little ones in Tennessee, you walk into, you know, Dayton, you walk into Rogersville, you walk into almost any one of them, and there'll be some marble in the interior. But you also see it across the country. You look at those post offices elsewhere, or a federal building built somewhere, and you'll see it. And back to your question about the national quarry, or a federal quarry, the big one was in Knoxville.
Right.
After the Civil War, 1871, the Custom House in Knoxville, Custom House, Post Office, Federal Building, was, to quote one of my colleagues, Steve Cottom, who's a historian in Knoxville, he's a historian of Knox County, and he's the head of the McClung Historical Collection at the Knox County Library. He believes that that building really was a reward for loyalty during the war to East Tennessee, and it employed a lot of Union soldiers. So, and this federal architect, Alfred Mullett, came down and he looked around and he said, well, let's use this local material. And so he really put his finger on the Knoxville marble. They quarried that marble. The federal project leased a quarry there for a couple of years. And after that building was done, which still stands today, right. It's the East Tennessee History Center, where this Museum of East Tennessee History is showing this exhibition.
Right.
After that was done, there were several partners who were involved in that project, and they saw the handwriting on the wall, they're going into the marble business, so they did. So that's the beginning of the modern marble industry, really, in Tennessee.
It's just amazing. Now, let's talk about the exhibit at the Museum of East Tennessee, is that's
Museum
the name
of East Tennessee History.
And it's up and at the present time?
It's up until July 16th, 2017.
Okay, so yeah. Just a couple more months. Mm-hmm. All right.
Yeah, it opened in November.
All right. And what will a person see there if they go to visit?
Well, you'll get a sense of what the material itself is. There's a whole area about the geology. And two prominent Tennessee geologists worked with us on it. One, Don Byerly, who's just retired from the University of Tennessee, who was already really interested in this. And we met through some other people and just have worked together the whole time I was doing my research on the dissertation. And Pete Lemisky, who is the East Tennessee State geologist. Okay. He's a U.S. Geological Survey person for East Tennessee.
Okay.
And he's terrific. And he, too, really contributed into this research. He did a big map showing where all these quarries once were based on work that we did at MTSU. We did a survey of both what we can know historically and what's still extant. And so the basis of that survey, which we did in the geosciences lab at MTSU, working with Zeta Law, who runs that lab, who's an archaeologist who many people will know in Nashville. She's been very involved with cultural resources here for years. And she and I put together a GIS, an electronic map, basically.
A geographic information system, a GIS. Okay.
Yeah, exactly. It works with a table of information, and then you can make that table become visible on a map, the places in the table.
Terrific.
So in this case, it's the names of these quarries and when they were opened and closed. And
I presume that they'll probably have artifacts that are associated with the mines and that sort of thing, or
yeah,
the quarries.
There are artifacts. Mm-hmm. There's some video interviews with people who firsthand are familiar with it, including the two grandsons of the man who found the marble in Knoxville for the first National Gallery of Art. A man named Malcolm Rice, who went to Yale Architecture School, and he was tasked by the architect of the first National Gallery, John Russell Pope, to go down to Knoxville and try to find this marble. And what the patron for the National Gallery of Art, Andrew Mellon, what he wanted to do was make something that looked like the Morgan Library in New York. So J.P. Morgan's library, remember J.P. Morgan was,
yes,
a railroad guy,
right,
who consolidated all the railroads into the Southern after the Civil War. He built his library in New York of pink Tennessee marble, and it came out of the quarries that are where Imes is.
And that, so you're speaking of the library that's right there in Manhattan.
That's right.
Yes.
The beautiful,
yeah, beautiful
little
library.
Jewel box of a library.
You know, we were there 2 years ago, and I had no concept that that was Tennessee marble, but that's
right.
Just terrifically fun.
I think a lot of
fun.
People don't realize it. And the
beautiful
other
building
thing in Manhattan, I mean, there are many buildings,
yeah,
interiors-wise, handsome lobbies and things, but the Grand Central Terminal, the pink,
yes,
marble,
yes,
floor, it's a dark pink, it has a gray vein,
right,
and the stairs are Tennessee marble.
That's it, and that's a terrific space, that Grand Central. It's amazing.
So we have a lot to be proud,
yeah,
of.
It's, yeah.
Once you start to see it and look for it, you're
my mother
amazed.
And father's, one of their favorite places to go was the oyster bar in,
absolutely,
the Grand Central Terminal. I guess during the era when the train was the 40s, when
it's
the train
still
was
a go-to
a big thing.
Place.
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So people should go and see this
people
exhibit.
So there are artifacts. The history is there, based on my dissertation research and continuing research by a team of people. I mean, we've done marble history information days up in Hawkins County and Rogersville. East Tennessee PBS has worked with us. They produce the videos, interviews that are in the exhibition. And then we did a chronological history timeline with historic photographs. You can get a sense of the industry really within a half an hour, and then you can hear people talk, you can see things made of the marble. You can get a pretty good sense of it. From
now there
the
is a website that's called the Tennessee Pink Marble Trail.
Mm-hmm.
You have something to do with that, did you?
I do.
Okay.
When we did those information gathering days, a person who came to one came with a bunch of a scrapbook in her lap of photographs she'd taken of her neighborhood in Knoxville. And she said, we've got all this marble, these houses made out of marble, retaining walls, patios. She said, I think we could tell people that they could drive through here and see, really see this marble. And this is true. It's all over Knoxville. And in certain neighborhoods, Holston Hills, Sequoia Hills, her neighborhood, which is off Chapman Highway, which is actually not that far from IAMS Nature Center. So this is Molly Gilbert, who is a tourism marketing person who lives in a neighborhood, and they were looking for a neighborhood identity. And she said, let's do this. And so we worked together to expand it so that people could go to sites like the Ramsey House, for example. Right. Historic house in Knoxville. It is a rough cut pink marble house.
Okay.
Built in 1797.
Wow.
And an early historian of Tennessee, J.G.M. Ramsey, grew up in this house. So you then get into, you know, where, and that marble was quarried very near 1797. You know, they quarried it and hauled it right down the road and built a stone house. So that's what the Pink Marble Trail is.
Okay.
So Molly continues to interest people in the idea of you can do a little loop around Knoxville. You can see some of the origins. You can see it in people's homes. You know, it's a point of pride for people. And you even find some really interesting places where people who worked in the industry brought home, as they were allowed to do, you know, scrap stuff and made themselves a patio. People made lamps, people made ashtrays, people made whatever out of some of the marbles that were, you know, bits that were not going to be used.
Susan, I get a sense that the communities where this industry was situated, in Rogersville, Knoxville, Maryville, there's been a response to this project, and as a theme for their tourist promotion activity. So it may have a good economic impact on these communities.
I think so, and hope it already has.
Yes.
That it's an amazing history. It's a proud history. And you go down Gay Street in Knoxville, and you look at those bank building fronts, Mechanics Bank, Holston Bank, they're Tennessee marble. I mean, this was a city that was really booming and you see that there, and you can still see it. It's intact. I mean, that's one of our proudest main streets that we have in Tennessee, you know, that really saw the reason. And Knoxville, downtown Knoxville, in the evening, all day, Saturday, Sunday, it's happening.
And I suppose that, you know, putting the marble in that industry aside, I mean, that is what people need to be aware of about historic preservation generally. I mean, history's all around us, and people are curious about it, and it's something that people want to come and see. That's an authentic part of us.
It is.
Yes.
It's true, and people respond, and the response that we've gotten, I mean, from kids too, because the Museum of East Tennessee History asks you to, you know, post-it notes and things like that. I mean, not only have people been coming forward with their stories of their grandfather or their grandmother who worked in the office, or the, you know, somebody was a superintendent, or somebody was an expert saw person or a finisher. Not only that, but other people coming forward to say, I had no idea, you know, but now I see it everywhere.
Right.
And other, you know, we've had one comment from a little kid saying, well, now I know museums aren't boring.
Well, that's terrific. That's the way it's supposed to be. Exactly. Well, Susan, it's been terrific to speak with you about this. What's on your agenda as far as projects in the future?
Well, this is an ongoing project.
Okay.
I've actually been working on this. When I first found out about this story, it was like 2004.
Oh, boy.
And it's just an example. I always wondered how people would say, well, it took me, you know, 5 years to write that book or whatever it is. Well, this is it's a matter of pulling all the threads and continuing to let them go out into the world. And we're hearing from people whose families were integrally involved, for example, in Rogersville in Hawkins County very early on. their relatives are all over this country, but they're connected and interested. And now that this history is coming up, they have things to share. And so we're still pulling together information. I think there's a bigger story even than we yet know because of the people connections. You know, it's not, and the reason I started this is it wasn't really in books anywhere.
Right.
We don't have a book yet. We have the exhibit. We have a lot of living things like these video interviews that East Tennessee PBS did. And I think it's got legs and will continue. And I'm fascinated. I'm still learning.
And the communities continue to call you to come speak and that sort of thing. So,
and they're doing their own things too.
Okay.
You know, there are lots of experts in this, in different aspects of it. I'm certainly no, you know, expert in geology.
Right.
But Don Byerly and I went up to Baltimore to present to the Geological Society of America. And I presented on the history and he presented on the geology. And so we did it as a tag team. And we've nominated the Tennessee Marble to become an International Heritage Stone. This is Don's idea that it's a, just another way. So we've written and rewritten an article to fit into the format that this group wants. It's an international group, as I say.
Okay.
And the journal comes out of Australia. The previous editor was in India. The current editor's in Korea. And so we're working through that to make sure that we've got everything they need so that we ultimately get it listed as an International Heritage Stone. And there are only like 10 listed at this point. It's relatively new. So we'd love to get Tennessee Marble in there sooner.
Wouldn't that be fun? Well, Susan, thanks so much for joining us today. It's been great to talk with you.
Thank you, Mark.
All right, Mark.